What is... Dax, are you...
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker? On all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all. So we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge! Trucks up 3.9%!
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to paint their door a vibrant shade of blue. Others have the need to decorate their bathroom with fish, anchors, and other nautical items. And because each homeowner has unique needs, Geico helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with Geico.
But anyway, what's the rest of the top three or top five podcasts you like?
I listen to Ali Beth Stuckey, Relatable,
yeah,
which is current events from a Christian worldview.
Okay. What else?
That's what I listen to the most. Every once in a while, I listen to Joe Rogan if he has some interesting, yeah, somebody interesting.
He's
on.
He's got to be on the top list for sure.
Yeah.
Joe Rogan. Yeah. Why do you like the Ali Beth Stuckey podcast compared to someone like Alex Clark? Because I always think of Alex Clark as someone who's kind of like pseudo political. I don't know if I want to use the word grifter, but she's certainly very good at what she does. She has excellent skill to where she could go into many different topics and her podcast would do quite well.
Right. Well, she's the reason I like Ali Beth Stuckey, she is relatable, which is the name of her podcast. I mean, she's a young mom with kids and she shares a worldview with me. So
yeah. She has chickens like you do.
No, actually, she said she will never be caught making sourdough bread or having chickens. It's not for her.
Oh, interesting.
That's not her thing. She says nothing against it, but she actually talks a lot about how she doesn't like the fact that there's this movement where all Christians need to, women need to be stay-at-home moms and making sourdough bread, and that's just not her. She said nothing wrong with it, but yeah, it's just not.
No, that's fair.
It's not her.
Yeah, there's a lot of benefit to individuality. Not everybody should live the same.
Yeah.
Not everybody should work out the same. Not everybody should listen to the same podcast either.
Sure.
Is she more relatable to you now that we have three kids and we're extremely busy with family stuff? And, we often get the question, like, why don't we have an au pair? Why don't we have a nanny? And, are we going to send our kids to school? And I guess why not from your perspective?
Why not? Well, our kids are only young once and I want to have the biggest impact on them I can. There's nothing I could do that's more important than being home with the kids and having control of the household. And I see that being my job is being a homemaker and taking care of the house. And that's my job. As you know, I'm a speech language pathologist by trade, which is great and awesome to help people in that way. That's just not what I'm called to do right now.
Yeah. I think you told me once if you could go back and do your education again, instead you would do something in fitness or health, like you'd be a dietitian instead.
Yeah. Well, totally. Going into college, I had a huge influence from my parents that I needed to have a job that would be I'd for sure have a job. I needed to go into a field where I would for sure have a job on the other end, which...
That way, if your husband leaves you, then you can provide for yourself.
That is a quote from my parents.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, they were helping finance it as well. And it's something I enjoyed. I didn't not like it. But looking back now, yeah, I have a lot more fun talking about and... working in things, yeah, like nutrition and fitness, but everybody was getting a degree and all the athletes were getting a degree in dietetics. And so it's just hard to find a job in that.
Yeah. It is nice that you work here from time to time. I thought it was funny when you were emailing someone as a care coordinator and saying, I'm out on maternity leave indefinitely now. That was quite funny. But in all seriousness, when we're outside of the fake social media sphere, and I think that we're generally pretty real, like that this is our real selves. Some people are that way on social media and some people are definitely not.
Right.
But at the end of the day, we're doing this in order to like help people. You can get good information out. And there's this like, you know, polarism of one side against another. Their tribalism is maybe a better word. But I have noticed when we're out in the real world and we're just around, people generally don't ask me for advice on how to train or how to change your diet, but they always seem to ask you.
Yeah, they do. Well, women, perhaps there's just a difference between women and men. Women ask me for advice all the time. Maybe because they find me relatable and or they just know that I'm married to somebody who knows what they're talking about, so I can digest all the information. Mm. I don't know.
Maybe. I mean, there's some degree, there's a little bit of a doctor's wife phenomenon.
Yeah, no, there is.
Where doctor's wives tend to get asked questions, but it's usually not, how should I track my macros? Or often should I get my DEXA scan done?
Yeah.
Or should I, because I'm a woman, should I do more HIIT and less zone 2 cardio? So you get some pretty specific questions.
Sure, sure. How I implement things. Mm-hmm. Yeah, for example, if somebody asking you about your nutrition, well, I do all of your cooking and and the main person that takes care of your nutrition. Are you asking like
why do you think they do? Because I have a different opinion on this.
Why do I think they do? I don't know if I have a good answer for that. Maybe they just, I don't really have a good answer for that.
I don't think that people care as much about credential anymore. Trust in conventional medicine in general, especially physicians, is at an all-time low. In fact, a guest that we're going to have on soon, Lexi Johnson, she was previously a dental hygienist, and her father had 4 heart attacks, and that really spurred her on to try to improve her health via lifestyle means, diet, exercise, etc.
Sure.
And thousands and thousands of people go to her for advice. Yet she's, she's not a physical therapist or a chiropractor or an osteopath. And it's generally this way a lot in the health industry. Health coaches that people listen to and watch and can relate to is some of it. They tend to seek advice from those people. For example, you've mentioned before that you generally wouldn't be as apt to take advice from someone that hasn't had kids before.
Sure. Well, advice on how to implement a fitness routine, just because it's different schedule. In the same way that people who come to ask me for advice are usually people in similar life situations than me. I stay at home. I bring my kids to the gym. It's different. I'm not getting the same questions from people who don't have kids, work a full-time job, go to the gym at 5 a.m. every morning. It just looks different. So the people asking me advice are people in similar situations, and they see that I'm doing it and they want to know how.
What do you tell them as your big 3 or big 4 things that they should implement right away?
Somebody who is already into fitness or someone who just wants to be healthier, or who am I giving
someone who's a little into fitness.
A little into it.
Not a lot. Maybe a little bit less than you were 5 years ago.
Sure. My main advice about diet is eat more protein. That's something I implemented. I never have had the time or energy to track all my macros and calories, but I had a lofty protein goal every day. And so I was able to meet that. That's a huge piece of advice. Other thing would be just find some sort of training that you enjoy and something that's fun. Because if it's a chore, it's going to be really hard to stick with. And it's going to be harder to see results if you don't enjoy it at all.
Before we did our current style of training, which I usually describe on the podcast as not CrossFit,
Okay.
Jokingly. Yeah. It's a lot of CrossFit. It's
functional fitness.
Yeah, functional fitness.
Functional fitness.
Before this, you're an excellent javelin thrower, but you have noted that since you've optimized your health, even in very small ways, you know, like improving your iron deficiency, that you could throw the javelin now further than you did even when you set your records back in college at Nebraska or wherever it was.
Yeah, most definitely. I take way better care of my health now too. I am a all around better athlete now than I was back then. Part of that may just be part of it's nutrition. Part of it is, you know, getting labs and having an idea of what's going on inside my body. And part of it may just be being older and having more experience with training. I didn't really know what I was doing when I was 18 years old.
The strength and conditioning coaches at the University of Nebraska didn't help you with strength and conditioning?
Well, it's a big program. I'll be honest. I came in to, I was a really successful javelin thrower in high school. And so I was recruited to go to a big university, but, even with some scholarship, they take a lot of people on that team and it's kind of do or die. It's you either going to go to the very top and you're going to get way more attention, or you're going to kind of sit in the middle and kind of coast along and not get as much attention, which is where I ended up being, as I never was able to get that attention that the top people did.
Yeah. Is that why they sent you to a sports psychologist instead of correcting your iron deficiency anemia?
Yeah, well, so that, yeah, that's a whole different deal. Yeah, I threw a lot farther before I got to Nebraska than I did when I got to Nebraska. And so they're trying to figure out, they're like, wow, you're not hitting anywhere close to your numbers and your form actually looks really good. We don't even have that much to say about it. Why isn't the javelin growing farther? And so they, you know, thought it was overtraining. Maybe they did send me to get labs done, and apparently they were all good. I don't know what were.
They didn't check a ferritin the first time then?
I have.
Probably didn't do any iron studies.
Yeah, I don't know. I was 19 years old. I have no idea. But they did draw blood and said it looked fine, whatever whatever that means. It'd be interesting to see what those were now. Yeah, and then
probably had a hemoglobin of like 11.1. Yeah. It's like right on the borderline of abnormal.
Yeah, no.
It just didn't show up red in their lab.
Probably, but I have no idea. Yeah. I can't speak to that. And they even, sent me to a sports psychologist. They thought maybe there's something going on mentally that's blocking you from being able to throw farther, because your form looks even better than it before. Technically, I was stronger than I was in high school. I could hit bigger PRs in the weight room.
Well, you're way stronger now.
I'm way significantly stronger now. Significantly stronger now. But I was still stronger in college than I was in high school.
Yeah.
And so they just couldn't figure out why is it not going farther. And they never really did figure it out, which is fine.
Yeah, no surprise there.
I did my 4 years and I retired after that, which, yeah.
Didn't they also tell you to eat as much peanut butter and calories as possible and basically dirty bulk up to, was it 200 or 210?
No. No, I think you're mistaken on that. No, they did weigh us.
Did they do the bioimpedance test? Because when I was in college running, we had to squeeze the bioimpedance test thing. It was wildly inaccurate.
To determine
body fat percentage.
They did the pinch tests. They did pinch tests.
Caliper
and they tracked
testing.
Yeah.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. And that, again, I don't know if there's some athletes that they paid more attention to that. That wasn't something that they were an area of
they did tell you concern. To gain weight though, right?
No, I don't think so. No? I don't I don't think that's right.
Well, in a healthy way, that probably would have been good advice. I'm surprised that a track and field weight thrower or a football player would go through college, and I mean they're strength sports. they probably should have told you to hit your macros to gain healthy lean body mass.
Yeah, there was a bit of discussion on nutrition, but it was really basics. Like, this is what a protein is. This is what a carb is. Mm-hmm. you need to fill your plate when you go to the training table with one green and one yellow. It was really kind of watered down nutrition.
What do you think your body fat percentage was in college?
Oh, geez. I don't know. Mid-20s? Probably mid-20s.
Mid-20s?
Yeah.
On DEXA?
No, that would be, I'm just guessing.
That's just like an actual body fat percentage?
Yeah.
Yeah. The DEXA is probably relatively accurate. Yeah, the bioimpedance tests that they had us do have got to be at least like 7%. Every guy was 6%.
Really?
They did the, like either 5% or 6%.
Yeah, they did.
If you were a guy, you got one of those two readings. So
yeah, they did.
Just like in-bodies. In-bodies usually tell you you're pretty shredded too.
They pinched. They did the pinch, which I know is not particularly accurate. We did get it.
It can be, it's operator dependent.
Yeah.
So the, kinesiology student that they had doing it, maybe if it was like a master's student, then it might have been pretty accurate.
Yeah. But I would say I'm leaner now 3 months postpartum than I probably was in college. But I weigh more now than I did in college.
Yeah. How much did you weigh in college versus now?
In college, I teetered in like the 170s, 180s, I want to say. And now, I mean, postpartum, it changes every day. I don't know, 190s, 200, somewhere around there. Probably closer to 200 now.
Yeah, which is pretty similar to previous to pregnancy, just at a slightly different body fat percentage.
Yeah.
Arguably slightly healthier to be a higher body fat percentage during pregnancy.
Sure, yes, yeah.
Yeah, because I mean, weight at the end of the day is just a number, and there can be a number of weight that it's unhealthy to be. But there can absolutely be females 200 pounds that are healthy. I think your pre-pregnancy DEXA was 17% body fat. 16% body fat, which is something like 10% on an in-body for people who do an in-body or a bioimpedance test.
Yeah.
It's usually about the amount of congruence.
And I weigh 200 pounds.
Yeah. So there's definitely, so you could have been probably 220, 225 and been perfectly healthy.
Yeah, sure.
And with guys that just tend to have even larger frames, I could probably weigh 250-ish and be healthy.
Sure.
But I generally don't get over 235 or 240.
Yeah. Well, it's important to note that I'm over 6 foot tall. And so.
Yeah. But even if you're not as tall, body composition still matters a lot more.
Definitely.
And I think one of the recurring things that you've told a lot of your friends or peers is that they should go get DEXA scans.
Oh, yeah.
Because everybody has their weight goal.
Yeah.
And males do this too, but why do females have a weight goal that is like what it was as a senior in high school? What is with that?
I don't know. It's just, it's an ideal. And I just don't think, maybe just people just don't know there's other ways to measure their body composition other than weight. I mean, I am a big advocate for getting a DEXA scan and getting just baseline. Even if you're not trying to do any sort of recomposition of your body, just having those numbers for when you're in your 20s and 30s, when you're 60, it'd be great to know what your bone density was and what your body fat percentage looked like then. Or if you have some sort of health condition come up, it'd just be great to know.
Yep.
It's worth the time and money, I think.
You've obviously had three pregnancies, three healthy children, and three breastfeedings in the past almost 6 years now.
Yeah.
But in the past 5 years, that is a lot of body composition changes and tracking and protein and this and making sure your folate's fine and making sure your ferritin's fine and your vitamin D and everything else. How do you track all those things? Like, I assume you count every single calorie you eat because that's the only way to do it successfully.
No. Of course not. I'm not very methodical about it, to be honest. Protein is just the number one thing I think about. It's the easiest for me to focus on. And I don't even exactly track my protein. I track snacks, breakfast and lunch, and then dinner. It's too complicated to weigh out exactly how much one serving is. And
you used to when you did a half marathon, though, right?
Yeah, before I had kids, I was single without any kids. I would measure every blueberry I had. And it developed a high, maybe an unhealthy relationship with food. Nothing crazy, but you just get so obsessed with how many calories do I have left today and what can I fit in those calories? And you start to get a little neurotic about it. At least I do, where protein's way easier.
Maybe a little bit orthorexic. I've probably been that way too.
Yeah. And I mean, sure. You could say that. Nothing, I don't know, like a clinical diagnosis. It's nothing that impacted me.
Hasn't everyone been like that at some point of their life though?
Probably. Yeah. Probably. Yeah. I think so.
I think so. I think if they haven't, then that's almost a negative.
Sure.
Because it just means that they've literally never thought about what they're putting in their body.
If you're concerned about your health, you're thinking about, okay, how am I going to be healthy? Or I guess it depends on your goals. What is healthy? Is it less body fat? Is it more aesthetic?
Yeah.
Aesthetic goals.
I always get the colors of pills mixed up. But there's like it's like the Matrix. There's the red pill, the blue pill. And I forget who else talks about this, but there's like a black pill where you're just like doom and gloom, you know, our bodies are full of microplastics. And then I think that there's a white pill. And I think that means that you're supposed to like, you know, it's all going to be okay. We're going to figure it out. God's going to help us. Yeah. And like, you know, just be a good person. Glass half full, if you will. But maybe people who never get that bit of orthorexia or like food / body image is probably the same exact thing at the same time. Maybe those people have just never tried to take they're just blue pill the whole way.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
How do you take someone that needs to improve their health, but they're like part of this health at any size or health at any weight movement, and then not be a mean and terrible person to them, but try to encourage them to improve their health?
Well, very delicately, I'm sure. I think
it's got to be people that you know pretty well,
yeah,
or people that come up and ask you.
Yeah, they have to have a really
not really random strangers.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yep. You would have to have a good relationship with them, and everybody's going to take in information differently depending on their personality. If you're, you know, bringing up studies, that could go well or it could go horribly depending on who you're talking to. I'm assuming if they're going to ask me for advice, then they're open to ideas and what you have to say. That's just so dependent on the person that you're talking to. That's really hard to.
So if it's a family member and there's some sort of a holiday event, would you, like me, make a big deal and say, I'm not eating any carbs? Carnivore diet is the only way to go. I always make sure to tell all the other family members that that's the only diet, and they need to make sure they have a lot of protein for me. Otherwise, it's not cool. It can make a big difference, but it almost becomes a political discussion, for lack of a better word.
Yeah, people are sensitive about it.
Yep.
I mean, if you're trying to encourage someone that you already have a good relationship with or family member to make better choices, I'm just giving general suggestions is what I would do. You can't change somebody's mind for them. If they don't want to change, they're not going to change. But you can give them easier options talking about, or what I've done. For example, I have a huge sweet tooth. And if I'm going to have a dessert or something sweet in general, I'm going to pair it up with protein.
What are your go-tos?
Greek yogurt. It's the easiest one and it pairs well with sweets pretty well.
Ninja Creami.
Oh, yeah. A Ninja Creami. So, yeah, same idea. Ninja Creami, Greek yogurt. But if I'm going to have something sweet, even if I just want to have something sweet on its own, first I'm going to eat 20 grams of protein. Mm-hmm. And then I'm going to eat something sweet. And I'll still enjoy it just as much. But giving suggestions like that if somebody does want to change and does want to take that advice, it can help them. But if they don't want to, they're not going to change.
So if I ask you, I want to be jacked and lean like you, but I don't like fruit with cottage cheese.
Okay.
And if I if I force the cottage cheese down the hatch like you do, should it be high fat or zero fat?
I would say it probably doesn't matter. Well, I guess if you're really forcing it down. I'm not
it's
sure.
More calories if it's
I guess. Fat. Sure. Is that what you're trying to get in?
You don't always eat zero fat.
No, I eat whatever I have.
Yogurts, yep.
Yeah. And I have small children around, and so I like to feed them full fat dairy. So
yeah,
I
just eat that. Triple cream yogurt. That's fun. That's fun to feed them too.
Still get the protein. Mm-hmm. It depends. And it depends how much I'm training too. If I'm training a ton, I don't care about it quite as much.
Yeah. That's good advice. It is really difficult to give advice that's individualized. And I've noticed that a lot of times when I ask you about people that seek out health and fitness advice, a lot of times you say, well, people shouldn't ask me.
Yeah.
But you've obviously had good success with what you do. And the more nuanced the topic, like diet and training, the answer is almost always, it depends.
Yeah.
Or the answer to their question is another question.
Sure.
For example, what do you tell people when they say, well, I want to be in great shape. Should I do CrossFit like you do?
It depends. Yeah, no, it depends. What motivates you and what's fun for you? CrossFit. CrossFit has been a lot of fun. I don't think I have a lot of issues with some of the training style, with some of it, but it's fun for me. And so I think it's fun and that's why I keep doing it. But if you don't think it's fun and you think it's miserable, then don't do it. It's not, you can find something that's going to work for you.
What did you do differently in terms of pregnancy, lactation, et cetera? Did you alter your workouts completely? Because I know a lot of people will stop doing CrossFit and then they'll just do like, you know, easy zone 2.
Yeah.
But did you still do heavy lifting and et cetera?
Yeah. Well, this most recent pregnancy, I continued my same workout routine. The entire pregnancy, continued to lift heavy, nothing, just whatever felt right. I don't think I went much over 80%, but not because I had this number in my head that I cannot go over 80%. Just that's what felt good most of the pregnancy. And so, yeah, I continued my same routine the entire time. Again, not because I think that's the most healthy thing to do, but it's just as fun. And it's part of my routine and I just really enjoy it. And I didn't want to stop. So,
yeah, apparently you didn't stop. Actually, one of the main reasons why we thought it'd be interesting for people to hear directly from you is I posted a story of you deadlifting. And I think it was exactly a year ago. You're what, 9 weeks pregnant?
I know, I was like 6 months,
You're deadlifting, it was probably 360 something pounds.
Yeah, I had just found out I was pregnant.
Yeah, and last
probably
week,
5 or 6 weeks.
You deadlifted probably within like 20, 25 pounds of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you obviously haven't lost a lot during pregnancy, but
yeah.
A lot of people said, oh, you know, that's fantastic because they love the vigorous exercise. And so right. A lot of people asked, well, like, what about your pelvic floor during both those times, especially the most recent time?
Sure.
What about your abs, your core? Like, are you worried about blowing out your abs? Like, you know, when do you lift with a belt? When do you lift without a belt? And yeah, I'm interested in what you would tell them, because obviously as someone who takes care of women and I've delivered a lot of babies and like I give people advice professionally, but it is significantly different than the advice that you might give them.
Right. Yeah. This is where I say people probably shouldn't take my advice because it's going to be so individualized. As far as my core in lifting heavy in pregnancy, if it felt okay, I did it. And I don't know if that's the best advice to give somebody, but I did it because, again, I enjoy it and it's fun. So I, you know, where the risk reward there, I'm not sure. And doing specific ab exercises, of course, I'm looking for coning of my stomach. I'd have somebody looking for that. Mm-hmm. Pelvic floor, if I felt like I had a heavy pelvic floor, I would stop and not do it. But I just am not somebody who is really methodical about doing things to prevent injury. I just kind of do what I enjoy doing. And if it mm-hmm. if it doesn't feel good, I stop.
When did you start lifting heavy after this last child?
Like postpartum, how far postpartum?
Yeah.
Well, I was back at, heavy is relative. I mean, I was back in the gym a few weeks postpartum.
When were you starting to move around barbells with more than 100 pounds on them?
Oh, I don't know, four or five weeks in maybe. Yeah. When was I starting to establish like actual heavy lifts, higher percentages? Was probably closer to the 2 or 3 month mark.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's pretty reasonable, especially for someone who has relatively good training. A lot of people, of course, start exercising during pregnancy and actually lose body fat during pregnancy. Mm-hmm. To be healthy, you obviously had to gain some.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, you obviously had a 10-pound baby. So it's not like it was a particularly small baby. But I think of the core as a box. Mm-hmm. Not just the sides, like the serratus and the front, your rectus mm-hmm. abdominis and your back muscles as well, but also your diaphragm and your pelvic floor. So I think this is one benefit that's kind of overlooked for certain types of training. Mm-hmm. For example, bodybuilding training might not train your entire core. Maybe it trains your abs and you have shredded rectus abdominis muscles, but the rest of your core box is not equally strong. So I think that's one thing for a lot of people to look out for. It's particularly important in males as well, mm-hmm. not just females. But I guess other than when you started and stopped, how did pregnancy and breastfeeding affect performance?
Yeah.
How much you enjoyed it?
How much I enjoyed it?
You were really sick.
Well, I was really sick. Yeah. No, I was extremely sick for the first half of this last pregnancy. And I continued to train half-heartedly. I did what I could. I'd show up on days and I had people tell me I lost the color in my face mm-hmm. and say, well, you know, what are you doing here? And, you know, my answer to them was not much, just going through the motions, but yeah. I need to be here.
Even after your iron infusions?
It got better after that. Yeah. Right. But this is the first, this is my, the real thick of it. We're talking the first trimester, just in the thick mm-hmm. of it. But I mean, my overall strength was less than, I wasn't hitting PRs anymore. You know, I was less strong. My cardiovascular strength or capabilities, I suppose I should say, maintained pretty much the same. I have the same, my cardio hasn't gone down a ton. Power, I have noticed, being postpartum now, I'm just not quite as powerful in those explosive movements like a clean and jerk and a snatch as I have been. I've taken more of a dip in those mm-hmm. areas. And then just generally nursing, I hold on to more fat than I do normally, which makes me a little bit heavier. I'm not sure. It makes me a little bit slower. Yeah, overall.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty normal change in performance that you could see as, you know, a pretty high level athlete. I know that you're, of course, naturally good at rowing. And I believe in your age group, you actually rowed a world record time of, I don't actually remember the exact number. I want to say it was 126 or 5 or something like that.
I don't remember.
For 500 meters.
Oh, no, it wasn't the, it wasn't a, I don't think it was a 500. It was a, it was less, wasn't it?
I think it was 500.
Was it a 500? It was a 500.
500 meters. Yeah, I want to say it was 125 right. or 126.
I was within a second of the world record, but that was before I turned 30. And then once I turned, if I would have turned 30 and done the same time, then it would have been a world record.
Yeah, well, you have to try. You'll have to try again at some point.
This is just in a random CrossFit class, yeah, so, you know, a Tuesday afternoon.
Yeah, if people are interested, they can look up Concept 2 Row Erg.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm pretty sure you could do a lot better than that, given if you can do that in a workout.
Sure.
Yeah, that's definitely like both cardio and anaerobic conditioning. It's more of a sprint. Sure. It's like a 400-meter run on a track, kind of. Actually, a bit longer than that.
Well, yeah, just being larger bodied and heavier is an advantage, too. So there's not a lot of women that are as heavy as I am that are also in the same, have the same cardiovascular abilities I do. Not a ton.
Yeah.
What do you say?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's
so that, I think that's kind of where, what makes me a good rower is I'm big, but I'm still in pretty big, good shape.
Yeah. So the higher level you start out off with, the more kind of flexibility that you can have. You can coast to some degree, but you can afford to coast. And now you can see after, I can at least see your muscle memory gains kicking back in, and you become reconditioned or retrained particularly quickly.
Sure.
And I think that if you had a less, you know, a less well-rounded fitness regimen, that would not be the case. For example, we used to do mostly, you know, general resistance training with a little bit of powerlifting at our home gym.
Yeah.
And then probably 4 years ago now, we thought, we like this home gym, but this is just not going to be sustainable for working out when there's two toddlers that are, you know, trying to hang off of us.
Yeah,
that was all times.
Closer to 2.5 years ago. It wasn't quite 4 years ago. But yes. It hasn't been that long.
It seems like it's a long time. 2.5 years ago.
Yeah, you realize you can't.
It's hard to remember that.
It's hard to work out on your own in your home gym with toddlers running around. You can't hit many big lifts when you're worried about your 2-year-old running in front of you.
No.
So.
And obviously we like working out with them and they like exercising too. And if it's the right workout, then we'll work out with them. But yeah, I think it's very healthy to have a good amount of time away from kids, if mostly from a social standpoint, but it's just efficient to get your workouts done when you're in a social group.
Sure. Yeah. I've really enjoyed it. I never thought I'd be a fitness class person, but I am.
Yeah. Yeah. I certainly didn't think so either. How did you make that switch from the home gym to a quote unquote real gym? Now we have memberships at two or three real gyms.
Yeah. The switch was I gave you a lot of resistance and my husband was very insistent that we needed a different option. And I caved. And it was a great choice. You were right. I was wrong. You were right.
Well, thank you.
You're right. Yeah. So we just one day after you said, it's just too hard to work out in the gym. We're going to, you know, we don't have to worry about anyone getting hurt. And we want to get a good gym, a good exercise in. We just joined a big box gym. And we had a free personal training class or personal training session when we joined our big box gym. I met with one of the trainers and I was kind of telling him what I was doing. And on paper, everything was right. You know, this much zone 2 and resistance training. He's like, oh, you should try this strength class. You should try it. And so he took me over and introduced me to the coach of that. And he said, she's going to try it next week. And so, and then I had to try it because the coach was there and was like, okay, I'll see you on Monday. And so I showed up and I really enjoyed it and did it for, I don't know, maybe a month before you were like, what are you doing? Well, I want to do it too. And you kind of, and it's been great that we can do it together. We actually, one of the things I love about either the group fitness classes or CrossFit, or doing CrossFit, whatever we're doing.
Not CrossFit.
What I like about not CrossFit is that it's been a fun thing that we can do together because you wake up at 5 or 6 in the morning and go to class. I go at 8 or 9, but we're doing the same workout. So we can come home at dinner and talk about it and, you know, what'd you do on this? Or how are you going to get better on this skill? And it's been a fun way that we can do something together besides raising our kids.
Yeah.
Without fitting that into a schedule. We're not spending the time together because, you know, life is crazy, but we can still.
It would be very easy to have nothing in common except raising kids together.
Yeah.
Which I think is sad. So
sad and dangerous.
Yeah. Unsurprisingly, we have many hobbies that we do not share in common. So, no. I mean, I feel
nice
like
to have some crossover.
Yeah, I feel like pretty much everyone is like that. But yeah, I was at Stormy's 6 a.m. class this morning, and we are going to have him on the podcast at one point as well.
Okay. So,
looking forward to that. I've never really spoken with him about you know, his candid thoughts or experience with either one of us joining.
Oh, no.
I could kind of expect some of his answers from what. So don't ask him. It'll ruin his first impression on the podcast. But that is kind of nice. But in terms of, you know, what you're looking forward to in the future, are you looking to continue this indefinitely? Or as our kids are older, do you think that our preferences will change? Because our preferences of a lot of things certainly change, but we've certainly had the conversation, well, how does our fitness and workouts look when or if we homeschool the kids? Sure. Or if they go to a co-op or they go to a wilderness play school now? And then there's all these options. There's Apogee schools, there's unschooling,
sure.
There's Montessori model schools, there's private schools, there's actually very, very good public schools in our area as well. So,
yeah.
I mean, these are things that we've talked about, but we also get questions about it. And at least what I answer is, I'm not sure, but here's a whole bunch of pros and cons about all of these different options.
Yeah. Are we talking about educating our kids or fitness?
Either one,
either
I guess.
Either one.
Yeah, whatever's more interesting.
As far as how we're going to work out indefinitely as our kids get older, maintaining the same routine, I don't know. It changes. Our kids are so young. It changes. It seems every day is different. And I have no way of really predicting what's going to come next as
yeah.
far as like how we're going to.
I thought the other day when I was traveling and I shot some hoops for just a couple seconds. And I used to play a ton of basketball, yeah. as you know, like the, I called it my old guy church league basketball.
Yeah,
included as an old guy.
The carpet floors.
Yes, the carpet floor church league basketball. And obviously I really enjoyed
yeah.
doing that. And, you know, we used to play basketball together
yeah.
quite a bit.
Yeah.
And volleyball, I used to play a ton of sand volleyball, which we really enjoyed. And we haven't really done any of that in almost 3 years.
Yeah.
So I thought to myself, you know, if one of our kids really likes a sport like basketball or soccer or volleyball, mm-hmm. I think I would start playing again
yeah.
just so that I could have fun, play it as
sure.
a sport. You know, the way that I see that question is a lot of people are kind of hyper competitive. If you look at either one of our Instagrams, we don't really post about, you know, doing a CrossFit competition, which we have on Friday and Saturday.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Or we don't really post about like whatever we do unless somebody else happens to be posting with us. But it, for some reason, all of those posts do amazing for interaction. There's
mm-hmm.
tons of comments. The algorithm loves it. And I think it's because people are just genuinely interested. But at the same time, it just feels super cringe to be like, you know, I'm a professional athlete. And at least CrossFitters, like every one of them kind of acts like a professional athlete, if
right.
that makes sense.
And we're all really mediocre.
Yeah. It's like, how do you know that someone does CrossFit? It's like, oh, don't worry. They'll tell you.
Yeah.
Just look at their Instagram. It's full
yeah.
of it. But it's fun. I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. But at least speaking for myself, I'm 4-something years older than you. I'm at least too old to be hyper competitive about that stuff. I just want
sure.
to try hard.
I will never, to be clear, I will never be really good at CrossFit. I mean, I'm over 6 foot tall. There's a lot of gymnastics.
I blame my levers too.
Okay.
My arms are too long.
Yeah, you're never going to be that great,
yeah.
great either. But it's just, fun. It's just learning new skills. I'm driven by the chasing after something that I've never been able to do before, whether that's even just getting back in the gym after mm-hmm. our second baby, just like strict pull-ups. That's something in college that I tried for years to work on getting a strict pull-up. I could never get a strict pull-up. Here I was a D1 athlete that could not do a strict pull-up.
Yeah, just blame your long arms. But you're good at them now.
Yeah, yeah. And then, you know, just chasing after that, like getting in to, I used to think I will just never be able to do it. I'm just too big. I'm too heavy. And then getting into the position where it's like, well, if you want to start doing some of the kipping, which that's a whole nother thing, you kipping pull-ups and stuff, you have to be able to do strict first. So it's like, well, I'm going to do it. So I, you know, I set my mind to it, and he's 3 or 4 days a week, I'm practicing my strict pull-ups, and then all of a sudden they start coming quicker.
I don't remember the timeline, but you know, a year and a half ago or whenever it was, maybe almost 2 years ago at this point. It doesn't matter when it was, yeah. But I remember you got your first kipping muscle up. Uh-huh. You were super happy. And I was like, well, I haven't really tried these, but man, if Maddie's doing this, I should probably try one to make sure I can do it.
I started worrying. You're like, yeah, I don't want you to leave me behind.
So I bought my grip so I could hang on to the bar really easy because I was terrified. You know, it's like 230. I might have weighed 235 at the time. And, you know, the nice big kip, and then I got several of them. And I was like, all right, this is fine. But I was terrified. And I mean, I pretty much just did it because you did it.
Yeah, same with learning double
someone
unders.
Asked me. She was like, someone said, hey, I saw that Maddie got her muscle ups. So are you going to do them? I was like, oh, well, I guess I have to now. So I did. And yeah, all the skills have been fun to learn. I just remember that I think Cameron and James came. Cameron's our media guy over here. But I remember you guys did several. I think you guys did strict muscle ups too. Yeah. Never tried one before, but just did several strict muscle ups. So yeah. So well, there is some advantage to being, you know, in your early to mid 20s, like Cameron and James, and then just being relatively fit.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. But they're only like, actually, they're probably about your height too.
I'm a little taller.
Yeah. Anyways, I'm not sure where I'm going with that, but it's basically just like Dr. Tommy Wood says, it's fun to learn new skills.
Yeah.
Whether it's double unders or juggling or whatever else, but it's efficient. You have your social life, and then you're learning like new skills or whatnot. Then you're learning how to love fitness too. Cause I have a lot of patients that like, they want to be jacked, huge muscles, mm-hmm. shredded, look great.
Yeah.
But the actual training part, they don't love as much. And even people who love bodybuilding, a lot of times if it's purely bodybuilding, there's nothing to do with the actual like act of lifting weights. They don't even really like the training. So it's kind of like they're suffering.
Well, it seems like fitness before we got into functional fitness was more just I'm doing it for my health, to check a box. I'm doing it for my health. I want to be healthy. I don't want to get really out of shape and not be able to get back in shape. It was more of this like fear of I don't want to lose whatever I have now. And as opposed to that switch of I'm excited mm-hmm. about moving forward. I want to see mm-hmm. what more I can do. Not this fear of, I don't want to be really out of shape.
Your metabolism slowing down.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now that you're 30, your metabolism will start slowing down.
Yeah,
right?
That's what I hear.
That's what I've heard as well. Uh-huh. Yeah. So back on the topic of kids and education and whatnot.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people do ask, hey, Dr. Gillette, you were homeschooled, you and brothers were homeschooled your entire life. And, you know, there's seems to be some major issues with your personality. You're too sarcastic and like, you know, you're just very different than other people. But, you know, I think that Josh and Grant and I turned out perfectly fine and like, you know, what I think is good contributing members to society or whatnot.
Yeah.
But I also don't think that you have to homeschool to do that. That being said, if I was not homeschooled, I do not think I would have turned out as well.
Yeah.
Because I would have had, you know, a whole list of letters of diagnosis behind.
Yeah, absolutely.
And yeah, until I was well into my 30s, the only things I ever took was creatine and protein.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm glad that I avoided all that. I mean, even compared to my colleagues in med school and residency, fortunately, I really liked the topics. So I was one of the only ones that I know of that like didn't use Adderall. Not that it's bad to use Adderall to like get through, but I mean, certainly avoiding that for as long as possible in our kids that do seem to have some of my same tendencies.
Yeah, that's for sure.
seems wise. So it's hard when people ask like what they should do, because there's the financial detriment of a lot of these extremely expensive schooling options. And then, you know, what's the job and career situation? How much do people like it?
Right.
But that being said, our original plan was I was going to work 2.5 days a week. I was going to have a College Park, which is the local faith-based primary care that dad's helped run for more than 3 decades till he joined here. But I was going to, I wanted to have like a College Park functional medicine and concierge option, do that for 2.5 days a week, and then kind of be like a stay-at-home dad homesteader, which was breeding strong-bred American wolfhounds and that had, you know, Dexter cow and goats and chickens.
Yeah.
And stay with the kids while you did speech pathology stuff.
Yeah.
But that plan only lasted a year or two.
If even. Yeah.
Yeah. But I guess at the same time as we did that, like other career opportunities came up for me. So it kind of made sense to take them. But I think regardless of that, your, how did your mind change from like, you know, continuing to work as a speech pathologist into what you're doing now?
Yeah, I remember a conversation we had in the car pregnant with our oldest. And you're kind of asking me, well, what do you think? Do you think you're going to want to go back to work? Do you think you're going to want to stay home? And I remember thinking, I don't know. I have no idea. I don't know until I'm there, which is not a good answer if you're trying to make plans. But I just, as I had kids, I just realized that I really wanted to stay home with them. And it just seemed more important to me than working as a speech pathologist. And that's different for everybody. That's just my passion kind of fell away from speech pathology.
Yeah. I mean, I just, where you worked at the time was an early childhood development center, Shining Stars, right?
Yeah.
You'd make IEPs for basically preschool, pre-elementary children.
Yeah.
Preschoolers, sure. Very young children. Yeah. And during first pregnancy, you know, March of Dimes used to promote various health things, and they used to watch out for, you know, various types of pregnancy issues. But there's something called torch infections, and one of them is CMV.
Yep.
And we haven't really talked about this in a super long time, but,
yeah,
you know, given that you worked among very, very young children that are at very high risk of having CMV, like a lot of these kids were from very difficult social situations. Mm-hmm. You know, I didn't want you to have a primary CMV infection during pregnancy.
And I didn't have infection. The titers. That was the...
Yeah, you didn't have any immunity to
immunity.
It.
Yeah.
So most people have immunity, but you can test CMV antibodies to see if you have immunity. So the last bit of pregnancy, you actually weren't, you know...
Working at all. Yeah, I stepped away from my position because we were concerned about that. So I was, I stayed home technically a few months before.
Yep. I think like somewhat ironically, this was pre-pandemic.
Yeah.
You had said, you remember what you said about not able to work with a mask on?
Oh, yeah. The suggestion was that I would, this is just months pre-pandemic. They're like, well, you could work with a mask over your face and a shield over your eyes. And I said, I am a preschool speech therapist. There's no way I could do my job with a mask on and a shield over my face. What therapy am I going to get done?
And the next year, as people know, everyone was doing their job.
Just months later, then I actually remember seeing some of the preschool speech therapists with like cutouts of their mask with plastic so the kids could see their mouth.
It's better.
But
it is better.
Maybe.
But yeah, there was probably a lot of therapy done during that time that was not
It's great. Unfortunate. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyways, with your, I guess you're changing your career, but it's still a career.
Yeah.
Do you feel like that has been a difficult transition given that it is more traditional? Because some people will very well may put, you know, they'll type in the comments. I always do this when I'm emulating commenters. Must be nice to have enough money to where you can just stay at home. Most people can't do that.
Sure.
And that's obviously one thing that you think of. But at the same time, childcare for three different children is not very cheap. Expensive.
Yeah.
I haven't added up exact numbers, but I've heard some people that have that also have three kids that are also like routinely getting childcare for all three of them. Might be at different places. Mm-hmm. Might be taking one to school. Might be taking one to daycare. Although I think they call it like Montessori. What do people call it that don't want to call it daycare? I forget what they call it. It's like Montessori preschool or something.
Yeah, there's different names for it. They call it preschool or school.
School.
No matter what. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's daycare. But it's fine. That's.
Yeah. So it's not as simple as you would think. But I feel like one of the big things that may have, and maybe this hasn't happened yet, but maybe directing us to some degree, is obviously as we talk about things and pray about things and be reasonable people. But we're also in a church and kind of like a church group of friends that I think is like in pretty similar situations.
Yeah.
So I think possibly even more important than, you know, like where are you sending your kids to school? Where are you sending your kids to the doctor? For example, you've said you wouldn't go to a functional medicine doctor if I wasn't a doctor, which I think is interesting. But perhaps it's just being in a social group of close friends and family that is going through things together with you. Mm-hmm. And it's something that I think most of us have really lost. Is when we moved to Kansas City, I think that was 5 years ago now, right? Mm-hmm. We were super isolated.
Yeah.
Even though we're both from Kansas City.
Yeah, both from Kansas City. We had a family here, but our parents are here. But as far as having a social circle, it was hard to find that social circle. With people going through similar situations as us, with the exception of, you know, a few high school friends that were still around. But even then, finding that community was difficult, but I'm so glad that we have that.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely so. Especially given that a lot of our friends have kids of the same age, which mm-hmm. which is an important thing. A lot of times if people don't have kids, then they just don't necessarily know what you've been through. If you're not a veteran that's been overseas, you don't necessarily know what like other veterans have been through. So sure. I think that maybe it's a little bit hardcore of an analogy, but there is truth to it.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
With your comment about, you know, not going to a functional medicine clinic if I wasn't a doctor, mm-hmm. is there a reason why you wouldn't? Because I know that you're also not extremely trusting of conventional medicine mm-hmm. either. What would you be looking out for?
Yeah, to be honest, it's hard to put myself in that position because I've been married to you for, 7.5 years. And we've always, since we've had kids, I've always been able to go to you for advice. I can't really say what I would do. I probably would avoid. I can't answer that question.
You would probably not go to the doctor at all.
Yeah, I would be at risk of not going to the doctor at all. But I would probably go to a conventional doctor and just take everything that they said with a grain of salt. I don't know.
Yeah, it's a tough question.
I just can't put myself, because who I was 8 years ago or 6 years ago mm-hmm. before kids is so much different than now. And mm-hmm. It's hard to even wrap my mind around that.
Outside of asking me questions, how do you get your health advice?
That's where I get most of it.
Health Google, or fitness?
Google, yeah.
ChatGPT?
Yeah, I'll Google things. I don't take everything you say and just run with it. I have to do my own Google research first, or I'll do the Google research first and then come get to see what your opinion is on it. Yeah. I think you can usually tell when I've gone down a Google rabbit hole.
Yeah, no, I think it's perfectly fine to Google things. I think one of the main frustrations that a lot of conventional and functional medicine physicians have when patients have all these questions, and the patients that listen to the podcast know that I usually dictate my answers to Mackenzie. Sometimes I type them out. Uh-huh. Mackenzie is my main nurse, uh-huh. of course, and she paraphrases them verbatim or not verbatim mm-hmm. the best that she can. But often people are very apologetic when they ask questions, even if it's through the like official Elation patient portal. This is like literally where they're supposed to answer questions, and they're paying, you know, paying a fee, a regular fee, whether it's monthly or yearly, in order to ask the question. So they're like literally paying a messaging fee, but they're still very apologetic. And I think that's because in conventional medicine and functional medicine, you're paying per visit, and it's almost like you're paying for a script. Like you go there, and if you don't get an antibiotic script, you're ripped off. You go to a functional medicine clinic, you don't get like a detox or a gut cleanse or, you know, IV metal chelation or Lyme disease treatment, then you're ripped off.
Sure.
And that, and by the way, people do go to most functional medicine clinics. They're going to treat you for one of those things. Heavy metal poisoning, mold toxicity, which people can be very allergic to mold.
Yeah, there's some truth. I'm
allergic to mold as well.
Truth to that. And there's some instances where it's appropriate.
But it's just not every single day they treat people who need it.
Right.
But then they also treat people who don't need it.
Yeah, and the same as conventional medicine.
Yeah. So conventional medicine, you go with sinus symptoms. Mm-hmm. If you go to a walk-in clinic, if you go to a physician that you've known for a long time, then they'll probably like very objectively assess, do you need this or do you not need this? But if you go to a random walk-in clinic, you're probably going to get an antibiotic, even if you don't need it.
Sure.
So it's really just two different sides of the same coin. In fact, I remember having, I don't know if I want to call it a complaint, but I remember lamenting over the fact that someone left me a one-star review on something. So your office manager has to say, hey, someone left you a one-star review. It was not in your regular clinic. It was your working after-hours walk-in clinic, for which you're compensated very poorly, and you work very hard seeing patients that, you know, want service right away, almost like it's an ER. But the review had said, well, Dr. Gillette was kind, listened to me, made the correct diagnosis, and did the correct treatment, but I felt that he didn't spend as much time with me as my physician usually does, who's been my physician for 30 or 40 years. And
one star
maybe
review.
If they left 4 out of 5 stars, it would have been okay. But really, was 1 of 5 all that they really could have done? And that's one of the reasons why I like things here, regardless of who you are, whether it's you or, you know, the newest patient that we have no idea who they are. We will spend enough time addressing their needs.
Right.
And we will also listen to them. And we are able to do that because of how we've set up the model. So I think that there's definitely a lot of benefit to that. But people, you know, just like if you have a private chef, we have our executive physical program. So people can kind of like, you know, get a little bit of everything off the menu if they like. But just like a private chef, when you're hungry, you have to let us know.
Right.
So typically our patients are good at letting us know. And then some patients don't let us know. Things come up and, you know, they say, well, it seems like worse. And it's been a few months. So we obviously want to know that. It does not bother us that we address things a bit earlier.
Sure.
And there's no extra charge for like whatever message or whatnot. We just want to deal with it. So hopefully that's a good pitch to someone who would normally not go to a we're obviously not just a functional medicine clinic, but we try to be a find the root cause and address it and then explain the risks and benefits of everything.
Right.
Some of our most common questions is, you know, what should I do in regards to an immunization, or do I need to be taking this supplement, or should I start hormone replacement therapy now or later, or should I do IVF or do fertility naturally? And the questions to almost all these things is it depends. So even as a doctor's wife, it can be hard to know right off the bat, this person needs this, this person doesn't. And even from my perspective, I can't really answer that question if they Instagram message me.
Right.
I need to have full, like, their full medical chart open and like, have a full visit. So,
definitely.
Yeah. Anyway, that's most of what I had the list to ask you today. I think we've chatted for almost an hour.
And I can hear the baby crying.
Can hear the baby crying as well. So for those that have other more specific questions or who enjoyed this or who didn't enjoy it but want us to talk about other things, leave your comments below. Otherwise, may God bless you with health and happiness.
Your old or broken phone can let you down when you need it most.
Perfect.
But at Verizon, trade in any old phone from our top brands and get the most for it, up to $2,000 in value, for an amazing new iPhone 16 Pro with Apple Intelligence and a new line on my plan, and iPad and Apple Watch Series 10. That's like a 3-for-1. And you can get it on any plan. At Verizon, trade in your old phone for a brand new iPhone 16 Pro, iPad, and Apple Watch. The other guys won't give you that. Visit Verizon.com today. Additional terms apply. Service plan required for Apple Watch and iPad. Up to $2,000 value based on iPhone, iPad, and Apple Watch.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to paint their door a vibrant shade of blue. Others have the need to decorate their bathroom with fish, anchors, and other nautical items. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.